This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kudun with me, Uma Pagan, Ambike Pagan. And the morning run taking you all the way from 6 to 10 a.m. this morning. It looks like it's going to be fair weather today.
We can only hope.
We can only hope. Actually, I think the weather has been fairly consistent, hasn't it, Uma?
It has.
So scattered showers, I can say, even without looking at the weather channel. Scattered showers throughout the Klang Valley.
Sharad, you could record that and play that every day and it would be true.
Almost. I mean, sometimes we have the haze. That's our season. Some people have winter, spring, autumn, cherry blossoms. We have haze. Major headlines around the world. I think it's still Washington dominating the mind space of people around the world just because of the extraordinary drama that's happening. Again, I think bets are now being taken in offices across the globe on whether Donald Trump, the president of the United States, is going to be impeached before the end of the year.
Well, bets are being taken not if he'd last the 4 years, but whether he'd last the year, right?
And if you were going to place your bets, if you were a betting man, and I know you're not because you're extraordinarily pious. No, I'm just kidding. what would your bet be, Uma?
I don't think the rate things are going. And if you know a little bit of history, it's running very similar to the way Watergate ran. It's a great time for journalism, though. I mean, if you're reading the New York Times or the Washington Post, they are putting out some tremendous journalism right now. There's a whole... It almost feels like they're trying to one-up each other. The Post releases something, and the New York Times Breaking News just released a memo saying that Trump asked Comey to end the Flynn investigation based on a memo that Comey...
But do you think in fact, Donald Trump has made it so easy for so-called good journalism? I mean, they haven't had to dig very deep to get this stuff, have they?
No, you're right. I mean, a lot of the time, he's just giving it away himself.
Okay. Well, speaking of digging deep, are there all kinds of local issues that we're also covering today? The JJPTR story is there on the front pages of so many newspapers.
Ponzi scheme,
but by a boy band. Don't they look like a South Korean boy band, except less pretty?
That's why he was so trustworthy. Sharad Kudun, a pretty boy came to you, asked you for your money. I wouldn't
part with my money with anybody. I mean, my money is more sacred than any other kind of impulse I might have. We also have on the breakfast grill today Dato' Sri Nick Norozatani, chairman of T7 Global. And Han is going to be speaking to him. Also, we're going to be looking at the constitutional issues following the divorce, as it were, between PAS and PKR. Some of the front pages of the newspapers, Sina Harian today, and ST also has a bit on that on the front page. PKR appointees in the state of Kelantan stepping down. And we look at the end of the day, after the 9:30 bulletin, we're going to be looking at Greece and the struggle for economic recovery in that country. We'll come back with more. This is A Gypsy by Fleetwood Mac. BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad, and with me, Uma. And the morning run rolls on. We had Teachers' Day yesterday.
Yes, we did.
Stories galore about teachers. But one story in particular struck me, Uma, and it was a story about Ahmad Saidin Mohamed Idris, which the NST described as a man who looks like an odd job worker. He turns out to be, in fact, a 40-year-old teacher from Sekolah Kebangsaan Lenjang in Lipis.
In Kuala Lipis, right?
In Pahang, who rides his motorbike 65 kilometers to school every morning and then, of course, 65 kilometers back. And it's a story of kind of everyday heroism, a story of going the extra mile. But I wonder, with so many of us, do we have a relationship with our employers, with the organizations we work, which we see essentially as mutually exploitative, right? You pay me, I'm going to work for as much as you pay me, and so on and so forth. Do you think that, we are even capable of this kind of heroism?
Well, I think the teaching profession, the medical profession, possibly kind of lends itself really well to this kind of story, right? So before I answer your question, you just got to listen to this. He's a father of two. He maneuvers his motorcycle along muddy tracks surrounded by dense forest to reach a school for Orang Asli children. Right? Yeah, so. And it's a calling for him, right? And that's why he does what he does. Unfortunately, I think for most of us, that daily trudge from 9 to 5 is merely a way to put money in the bank and food on the table. Right. I don't think there's that much passion.
I mean, I think you use a wonderful expression that doesn't get used very often, calling, right? Or we sometimes use the expression a vocation.
Yeah.
And a vocation is not just a job. It's not just your occupation. It is something more than that. It is something that has a higher purpose. And I think this is where maybe a lot of our jobs differ from the jobs, as you put it, like teaching. But I wonder if that's the truth, then is it only people in teaching and in who are doctors or nurses, or and I think it's also true of journalists.
I think
where
right,
there is the sense of a higher purpose, a calling. Is everybody else exempt, or are they kind of excluded from the possibility of feeling that way about their work?
I think it depends on your work, and it depends actually on your own character. It's definitely a character thing, Sharad. I mean, someone working in IT, for example, right? Just say a coder, a programmer, if he's incredibly passionate about that job, and, you know, coding and programming has played an incredibly important role in our day-to-day. It's influenced almost everything we touch, right? Steve Jobs felt the same way, right? He felt he was changing the world. When you think about him, he was the guy that was making phones.
But it's also the top of the line, right? So he wasn't the guy at the assembly line.
He would inspire. I mean, you see there are some videos of his town halls and just he's talking to the employers of Apple. And it's insane. He inspires this almost weird cultish following. And I think they would go back to their desks and go, yeah, I'm changing the world, baby.
Okay, so you kind of feed off somebody else's vision, somebody else's vocation. And that's probably what good leadership in any kind of work organization might be. But what about jobs that just doesn't have that dimension, that just doesn't inspire? What if you say we're working at a fast food joint and you were making the burgers? Could you find something in that? I mean, maybe we're asking too much of work. Maybe for most people, work will always ever be that simple exchange between your labor and something that keeps you going in terms of rent and in terms of food and such.
That's not wrong, is it? I mean,
it's not wrong.
I don't feel that's wrong because I feel, yeah, people just sometimes need to just do the stuff that needs doing. It doesn't mean you have to absolutely love putting 3 squirts of ketchup on that burger and nothing more and nothing less, you know? That's all right, I think.
But what about customer service? So, okay, so there's this thing that with all these service industries, we've mentioned
a lot of service industries.
Fast foods, is that you are making somebody's day wonderful. And you can tell by the service staff that there's something special about people who serve you with a smile, not a fake smile, but with a smile that says, I actually am interested in you. I'm curious about you. And, we could exchange something, even in this brief moment of the money and the order being put together. Some people just bring kind of a little magic to the way they interact with other human beings that others just don't have or don't want to.
But you can't train that. You can't teach that. That's a character trait. I think that's something incredibly individual. We're not talking about Singapore Airlines, clearly. But we're talking about, you're right, when I make a customer service call, and if I have someone who doesn't sound like they're reading from a script, and they sound like they're genuinely interested in my day, that makes a big difference to me. And it means I'll continue going back to that company, right?
Yeah, it could be. And then there's also the question of, just training people to be more attentive to this. Right? I mean, saying to them that it is possible to put a bit of pep into your work and try and find some deeper meaning. I mean, if you didn't have that, I think it would be a really hard slog. You wouldn't be able to sustain that kind of feeling without a sense of high purpose.
Let me tell you, every morning, Sharad, we come in here, 5 a.m.? Plenty of pep, my friend. Plenty of pep.
Okay, we'll be back with more BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Suzy Q with by Dale Hawkins. I'm Sharad, and with me, Uma. And we're talking about what is now being termed indifferent relationships. It's really produced by a body of academic literature that's about relationships at work. Surprisingly, a professor of human resource management has found that when you barely know somebody at work and if you're just on a first-name basis, in fact, you don't really remember their names, this actually might be a good thing. These indifferent relationships produce possibilities of innovation, produce new ideas. Because when you present new ideas or something innovative to a friend at work, because we often have friends, they tend to be the minority, they tend to agree with us. They don't push back on our ideas. So we don't get the best out of that relationship. The question, Uma, is can we go on to engineer more in different relationships? Is that a good thing?
So that feels a little bit like common sense in the sense that we often surround ourselves with people who share our worldview and also who people who just agree with this, right?
And who we want to have lunch with.
Exactly. And so these indifferent relationships, like when, you know, when you're walking around the office and you're like, you know, run across Sim having a coffee and you're like, hey, what do you think about this idea? Sometimes you may, you know, it may hit him in a different way because he may have a completely different worldview. And so he may completely hate that idea and you can immediately tell from the look on his face that he hates something. And I think sometimes that's the wake-up call you need, especially when you're in this echo chamber, to actually fine-tune your own thinking.
But how many of us actually would make that move, would actually go up to somebody we hardly know and engage with them in a, you know, tough and discussion of innovation or reform at that workplace?
So it depends on your work environment, does it? I mean, I know a lot of people hate the idea of open offices, but in some sense, that helps because it forces interaction between people you wouldn't normally know. I mean, a shared space like a pantry or a common area means that you run into other people having lunch. And when you're sitting down face to face with someone, you have to say hello and it's just polite.
Well, I don't know about that. I think, you know, many of us find ways of creating a little kind of like tunnel.
Like a tunnel,
like an invisible tunnel. And it's like a tube. And we just
call your cell phone.
We are, and you can float through it. And all you do is you refuse to make eye contact, or that if somebody does, and for some strange reason, you're looking up and you're looking at a fly on the wall and somebody comes into your view and they catch your eye, you try not to make it look like you really want to engage with them, right? So there are all kinds of strategies to keep most of the people in your office on that level at bay.
Well, so here's the interesting thing about the story. The story we're reading is from Quartz. It also points out the fact that people who are slightly introverted and may keep to themselves are also great sources of innovation. I mean, we know this. It's a bit of a cliche and a stereotype that
you mean the loners?
Yeah, geniuses are loners and they're kind of insular and they don't like social interactions because they're all in their own head, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes you want to tap those individuals because, yeah, they may not be the people who will come up to you and make that first move.
Okay, so let's say that the work that's done in these ivory towers of knowledge will not go to waste. So today you're going into work and you might actually be an extrovert, somebody who has many friends. Maybe the point would be to make an effort today to sit down with somebody you don't really know, but of course we all acknowledge as colleagues, and engage with them on something important regarding work and see if that actually produces something more than small talk.
Or something new, right? Although, word of warning, I mean, if you are one of those extroverts, just don't go head on to someone who might be an introvert. There is nothing scarier or more intimidating than that for someone who is an introvert.
But if the discussion or the research has shown us that those are the people who are most likely to give us critical feedback or creative feedback, then we want to seek them out. I mean, whether they are hurt by it or discomforted or they have to rush to the toilet and head hide their heads in a roll of toilet paper. The point is you've gotten something out of them. And isn't that the point of workplaces, kind of mutual exploitation?
Gently does it, Shira. Gently does it ease people into it.
Do you think so? Okay, so the question is, is it possible? All these things. I mean, I don't know how much material you read about office relationships. I really don't, because I don't believe that there's going to be practical value at the end of the day of these
right.
things. I mean, when you read these things, do you find that they're of practical value?
I think sometimes they're pointing out if it's a research study like this one, I think it's pointing out something that maybe a lot of people already know. I think we know the fact that sometimes you can get great new ideas from unlikely sources. We know that. We also know that interaction outside of an echo chamber is very, very important. We see that in social media, and it's a conversation that was brewing in a great deal throughout Brexit and Donald Trump and all of that stuff, right? So we know these facts, but I think when someone publishes a research paper like this, it kind of gives the numbers and the statistics as something we may already know in practice.
Okay, the other thing, and for me, the chief takeaway are the new terms that are coined. So the idea that you can, in different relationships, is not actually
for
a
me,
bad
it's brilliant.
Thing. It's brilliant, isn't it?
It's like the conscious uncoupling in different relationships.
Conscious uncoupling?
That's what Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie were. Oh, no, it wasn't Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. It was
some other celebrity couple.
Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow. That's right. They unconsciously uncoupled.
Okay, so he's a musician and she's an actress.
Correct.
And they unconsciously uncoupled.
Yes, uncle. He is the lead singer of Coldplay.
Oh, Coldplay. Yeah, okay. I remember that. It's a band. We're not going to. I don't know. Do we play Coldplay?
We play quite a bit of Coldplay.
We do, because we do. We're kind of.
We're a hip station that
we're
way.
A hip station. The taxi driver this morning told me, yeah, I see those Bieber-free music things, but you really should maybe move on from Bieber because Bieber's not big anymore and have some other band. But I said, yeah, but it's got to be a B band, as it were. Okay, we're gonna rock out with something less contemporary. We have the Rolling Stones and Hang 5. BFM 89.9, Sharad and Umar with you, and that was Alone With You by Sunny Boys, a band that I'd never heard of, and a tune that I haven't heard before, but it was good, wasn't it, Umar?
See, this is the whole idea of BFM, Sharad. Even you are learning new things every day.
I do, and that's why I love this job at BFM. I really, it's like, you know, it's like a mental...
Manna from heaven.
No, I was going to say that manna from heaven. I wasn't going to reach for a religious metaphor. I was going to for the sports metaphor. I was like, it's a sprint. Every day this morning, it's a real stretch, like in yoga. Okay.
Speaking of religiosity.
Yeah, well, you know, Thai internet service providers are under pressure to shut down access to Facebook. And apparently it's because Facebook has content that the Thai authorities find objectionable. And often, and mostly it's got to do with the Thai monarchy. So BFM spoke to Sunay Pasok. He's a senior researcher on Thailand in Human Rights Watch's Asia division. We asked him what the Thai government is most concerned about, what it's reacting to.
The position of the current military government is that they set top priority to preventing and banning any form of critical comments about monarchy. For them, you know, the internet is considered to be an uncharted territory, an uncontrolled territory that they are unable to restrict comments of people both in Thailand and abroad. So reaction to Facebook and other social media is almost like a knee-jerk reaction to catch up with the reality that they are now dealing with an uncontrollable environment on the internet, that people still express their opinion, express their comments freely. So they come up with a threat to ban Facebook, to ban YouTube and other social media. And this is not the first time. It has happened several times since the coup in 2014.
Well, that sounds very familiar. We also asked him what that means for freedom of expression in Thailand.
Well, freedom of expression in Thailand only disappeared, you know, with the military takeover. And there is no end in sight. Each day we see the worsening of situation. The junta do not tolerate dissenting opinion. They do not tolerate criticism of their mismanagement or alleged corruption or human rights violations. And this intolerance toward criticism and dissenting opinion seem to be widening each day, seem to be deepening each day.
That was Sunay Pasok, a senior researcher on Thailand for Human Rights Asia Division, speaking about the attempt to shut down Facebook in Thailand. A very serious issue. But the thing that I got most from that interview with him, Umar, was the fact that the military is playing catch up on what's already happened and happening in a really massive way in Thailand.
So the regulators in Thailand have come out because the deadline lapsed. They gave Facebook a deadline, right? And then they came out yesterday and they said, "Oh, okay, no, there's nothing in progress at the moment to shut down Facebook as yet." So they clarified that. But what's interesting is for me is the relationship between corporations and governments, right? Because Facebook themselves, in their statement, it's very cunning. They said essentially, we will comply with the local laws of a specific country. And by saying that, they kind of avoid this notion of being accused of suppressing human rights or freedom of speech, right? Because they're saying, hey, we're just complying with the local laws. But of course, it also depends how much influence a specific country has. So a lot of these corporations...
China is the model, isn't it, exactly, for being able to really muscle your way through on this question.
When you
question.
Have that bigger population and money, all these corporations will kowtow to you eventually, right?
Nice use of the kowtow there.
Thank you. Okay. But what happens when Malaysia asks, for example, because it's not beyond us to request such things when if people are posting things that our authorities find objectionable, will we be taken seriously even though we have one of the largest Facebook users in the world? What happens if Donald Trump asks? Because God knows he's going down that route, right?
Well, Donald Trump has to contend with an open media. He's also got to contend with the fact that it's a democratic country. Unfortunately for Thailand, that was, had really moved to, in a very serious way, towards a democratic administration, you know, with, despite all his problems, Thaksin Shinawat and successors like his sister Yingluck. The question really is, now for Thailand, I think it's a question of legitimacy. The legitimacy of the king, the legitimacy of the junta that runs it. I mean, it's an extraordinary country because the economy is doing reasonably
really well.
Despite it being a junta, it seems to have, you know, no effect on that score, I think, in large part. But the junta really does have a problem. And I think Sunay Pasok mentioned again, you know, it's mismanagement. So they're trying to protect the king. And it's always easy to say, we're trying to protect the king, as opposed to saying, we're trying to protect ourselves and our mismanagement and our human rights violations. All those things are there. The thing is, Uma, isn't it true that you can only suppress these things? They will come back and haunt you.
You can't suppress anything on the internet these days, right? So you suppress it on Facebook. There's a million other channels that someone can use to get that information, these objectionable photos, whatever, to get it out there, right? So unless you actually start actively blocking things. But then again, even in China, it's not really actively blocked, is it? People have workarounds and they have backdoors in which they use to access Google and Facebook and everything else.
You know, I lived in Thailand for about half a year doing research. And one of the things that I noticed about that country is that there is so much concern about protecting the image of the Thai monarchy. But at the same time, there's huge rumour mill about the... and people love to gossip about the royal family.
Don't we
all? And the royal family does produce wonderful drama. You think the White House is bad today? Okay. White House today might be providing the Thai royal family with real competition, I think, in terms of the rumor mill. But, you know, it's endless. And so it's that whole thing. As soon as you suppress thing, it's going to come up perhaps in a different form. We'll be back with more after the ads, Driving by the Kinks. BFM 89.9, and the morning run continues. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Uma Pagad, Ambika Pakan, and Tan Chung Han. And we're going to be looking at the top business stories that we're going to be covering for the rest of the morning. We start with Trump, and we go to Iskander Waterfront, and we talk about the grill that you're doing after the 8 o'clock bulletin.
That's right. So let's start with what's happening beyond our shores here. The White House, the U.S. White House.
Chaos!
Pretty much.
Did you hear the sirens just now? They're driving down to Capitol Hill.
Because they need all the help they can get. All right. So the White House engulfed in negative headlines. You've got U.S. President Donald Trump apparently sharing classified information with Russian officials. And then also just very early this morning, our time, you know, we had breaking news. There was a New York Times article saying that Trump allegedly interfered with the FBI investigation into ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. You know, so you've got all these negative headlines going on. And at the same time, we have seen how the U.S. dollar has posted losses for a fifth straight day. So after the 7 a.m. news, we'll be speaking to Dodge Dorland out of New York. You know, and we're going to ask him this question, though. how much longer can global investors, you know, put up with all this drama? You know, is this becoming, is this expected of, you know, the person who many still describe as the leader of the free world?
I have only one word. It's a German word, so it got many syllables. Schadenfreude.
Oh, nice.
You know?
Yeah.
You're just okay. Taking, you know,
taking pleasure in someone else's misery.
Misfortune. Right. Okay. We have also Iskander Waterfront Holdings.
Yeah, so this one, when I first read this story, and I'll tell you the story in a bit, when I first read this story yesterday in my apartment, I let out a very big what? And I think, like, my neighbors, you know, have just gotten used to me having this kind of reaction to this, you know, headlines that are coming out of this Bandar Malaysia deal. So here's the latest twist. According to the minister in the Prime Minister's Department, Dato Sri Abdullah Rahman Dahlan, the Iskander Waterfront Holdings and C-REC JV, they can have another go at the Bandar Malaysia project. Now,
they were the ones who pulled out.
Not pull out per se, because their
relationship was ended.
Right.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
So yeah, 2 weeks ago, like the government owned TRX City actually said that these guys were not meeting its payment obligations. So the question here now is this: if someone has apparently failed to meet payment obligations at reportedly a lower price, why are you going to let them have another stab at this deal? Again, if we're taking everything at face value, you know. But the government, and I have said that this is apparently not a flip-flop. We'll be discussing this very intriguing story, you know, after the 7:30 news bulletin.
Okay, and you're also coming up after the 8 o'clock bulletin. You're going to see Dr. Sri Nick Norazul Thani, chairman of T7 Global.
Right, so we've got the Breakfast Grill, I know, and they're having their AGM today. So we'll, it's rather timely that we're having this grill today.
Okay, we're going to be coming up to the news at 7 o'clock shortly. But before that, we have You're Gorgeous by Baby Bird, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.